Wild food. Talk about evocative. Images of purity, being at one with natural rhythms. Wild food was the heart of an interview that we did in 2010. It was with writer Paul Greenberg, and it was one of those discussions that turned our thinking in some new directions. Paul wrote the book, Four Fish, The Future of the Last Wild Food. It's about the four fish that dominate our menus: salmon, sea bass, cod, and tuna. Paul joined us to talk about what he believes is happening to our last wild food, fish. Paul, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Lynn.
So, Paul, four fish. Which four and why only four?
Well, the four fish, first of all, are salmon, sea bass, cod, and tuna. And when I chose those four fish, I really wanted to look at the problems of the sea in the way that the consumer confronted them. There have been many books about the end of the ocean or the problems with fishing and all of
that.
But I think the average consumer kind of finds it kind of confusing. And so what I really wanted to do was to look at four fish that were very, very common in the marketplace and to follow those fish both in and out of domestication, because all of them are being domesticated in some way or another.
Hmm. All right. Let's pick one of those fish as an example to give us sort of the highlights of what you learned. And since bluefin tuna, you know, is the darling of every sushi chef and every sushi lover, let's talk about the bluefin tuna.
Yeah. Well, first of all, there's three species of bluefin tuna out there. There's an Atlantic, a Pacific, and a Southern. But the one that everyone is concerned about right now is the Atlantic bluefin. And this is an amazing fish. This fish swims at 40 miles an hour. It crosses the Atlantic. It can be over 1,000 pounds, over 15 feet. It's a huge, huge fish.
15 feet? That's a bedroom.
Yep, I know. And another interesting fact about them is that they're warm-blooded. I think a lot of people think of fish as these sort of, you know, the expression cold fish.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
This is, in fact, a warm fish. And in certain cases, when you bring them out of the water, when you put your hand on their flank, you can actually feel the warmth coming off their body.
Oh.
So it's an incredible fish. And for those of us who've seen them and held them, they really feel much more like wildlife than food. And, you know, once upon a time, bluefin were despised even by the Japanese as table fare. The nickname that sushi chefs gave to bluefin was chibi, or means 4 days, because Japanese sushi chefs, when they first started using bluefin, would bury them in the ground for 4 days to get rid of that, like, bloody metallic taste.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that said, over the years, the Japanese grew to appreciate bluefin, mostly because during the American occupation, they were exposed to high-fat foods like beef, and they sort of that sort of translated into this very fatty bluefin. It's really the fat content that makes bluefin particularly appealing on the palate. And oftentimes with a lot of fish, it's fat content. Bluefin are extremely rich, particularly the otoro, which is this sort of ventral, you know, chunk of fish.
It's the belly, isn't it?
Near the belly,
yeah,
exactly.
It's the belly.
And so that's become, you know, really, really, you know, appreciated and loved. But I also think, you know, there's a certain class of people out there who just want the best, no matter what it does to the world. You know, it's those people who want to drive a Hummer, even though they know they're getting whatever 5 miles to the gallon or 10 miles, whatever it is. And so there's these people out there, you know, it's become ensconced that bluefin is the best. And I think our fetish of this fish has really just gotten out of control.
You know, going back, I don't think we realize that fish are wild.
It's true. And even if you look at the word seafood, you know, I mean, it's kind of a disgusting word when you think of it. I mean, we don't call everything from the land. We don't call it land food. But seafood is this sort of kind of catch-all word that we use to just pull out whatever we want and turn it into food. But, you know, the thing is, one of the reasons I think we don't recognize it as wildlife is that there's still a lot of fish in the sea. I mean, we take 170 million or billion pounds, sorry, of fish out of the oceans every year, which is, you know, the equivalent to the human weight of the population of China. We take that out every year. So it's not like we're dealing with buffalo or tigers or lions in terms of raw numbers. There's still a lot of fish out there. And so we haven't gotten to this point of extreme scarcity that we have to start thinking about it as wildlife. And I think in a way, abundance and or scarcity is linked to the word wildlife. Something has to get scarce in us for us to go, like, slap ourselves in the forehead and go, duh, oh my God, it was wildlife and we ate it all. So, I mean, I think what I'd like to see happen with fish is that we realize it's wildlife before we eat it into a situation of scarcity. And I actually think for even for the bluefin, for the Atlantic bluefin, there's still a chance to do that.
So the other fish that you selected, for instance, cod. What is the story behind cod? Isn't it endangered at this point?
It isn't. It isn't endangered in the sense of, you know, you can never talk about a single species in the way that you talk about, say, I don't know, California condors. Because with fish, they're still so numerous that there are these separate populations, or what they call stocks of cod around the world,
right,
that function like sort of nations. They have independent ecological economies. You know, there's several cod stocks that go up and down the American and Canadian coasts. They're all severely depleted, but some of them are rebuilding. In particular, the Gulf of Maine cod stock is now, according to marine fisheries, is 50% rebuilt. But taking another step back and unpacking that endangerment further, we have to always look back at history and what we had and what we lost. You know, the amount of sheer just abundance of cod that was out there is just astounding. I mean, there was, as recently as the 1960s, 2 billion codfish off the coasts of Atlantic Canada. And now we're talking at probably numbers in the you know, low millions to hundreds of thousands. So you could say to somebody, we don't got a million codfish out there, that's pretty good. But compared to 2 billion, you know,
that's not a lot. Yeah.
It's several orders of magnitude. And it's that abundance thing that we really want to focus in on and try and restore to our oceans. You know, what cod really represent is the industrialization of fishing. Before we found cod, fishing was really much more just of a hook and line endeavor. Mm. Cod, though, because they have these huge aggregations, really prompted us to kind of ramp up our what's called industrial fishing, huge bottom trawlers that tear up the bottom, just massive fishing effort. And I think it's really with cod that we need to start backing away from that industrial effort. As some of these codfish populations rebuild, we need to think, you know, what we need are kind of ecologist fishermen. I call them herder fishermen, in the sense that they need to feel intimately related to their particular stock of fish and feel both responsible for the catching of them and for the preserving of them. And if we can get to that place, I think that there's a hope for fish as food.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, thank you.
Thank you, Lynn.
Paul Greenberg's latest book is American Catch. Take a look at Martha Holmberg's lovely take on a simple summer pasta with canned tuna. Angel hair pasta with flash sautéed fresh cherry tomato sauce, tuna, and green olives. You can find it at splendidtable.org.